This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for an art stroll in the French Quarter or the St. Claude Arts District, we've got Dirty Linen and more, plus a bird's-eye view of the Louisiana coast through the lens of an acclaimed New Orleans photographer. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. With Whitney White Linen Night now in the rearview mirror, many art lovers have their sights set on another art stroll. Dirty Linen Night, presented by the Arts Council of New Orleans, kicks off this weekend. Nine blocks of Royal Street galleries and boutiques will open their doors for a French Quarter arts extravaganza. A newcomer to Dirty Linen is the Foundation Gallery, which recently moved from the Julia Street White Linen District. The gallery's show is Beastly Delights by Marini artist Jane Talton, who joins me now with Foundation Gallery Director Erica Amrine. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Hello, Diane.
So, Erica, is Dirty Linen a spoof on White Linen Night?
I believe they started in 2000. It was a spoof on White Linen Night, and people were encouraged to wear their dirty laundry from White Linen Night. So it was literally dirty linen, and it just grew in popularity over the last, I guess, 14 years now.
So why did the Foundation Gallery change locations?
Julia Street is a bit swanky for our sensibilities. We like to bring in thought-provoking art, but we also like it to be accessible. And while we were looking for other locations, you know, we considered the St. Claude District, but they're even just a little bit too subversive for us. We really feel like Royal Street and the French Quarter is a perfect fit for what we're trying to bring to the public.
And speaking of thought-provoking art, can you tell us how you were attracted to the work of Jane Talton?
Oh, easily. It's simply amazing. She has this technique that is unbelievable with oil painting, but she also has a sense of humor and a wit that makes it fun to look at.
Jane, the show has been described as rather bizarre, as you show animals exhibiting human qualities on a make-believe landscape?
It's anthropomorphizing animals, but in a way making people animals, too. And I mean that only because I think we understand animals better when we can see ourselves in them. I put my cat in a Tudor collar. He was my first inspiration for the show.
So tell us more about what you are exploring in Beastly Delights.
Mostly the Renaissance. That's where my main inspiration comes from in terms of style and color and painting technique. You know, I've spent the last 6 months held up in the studio, and all the work is very new.
You have quite an imagination, and you pull on our imagination. I saw dogs and pigs and sheep, iguanas. You have all creatures, and they're beautifully framed. These are portraits.
Well, I kind of wanted to give a sense of an old-world European-style hanging, which makes it a little bit more tongue-in-cheek, because this isn't, you know, French-Parisian Academy art. It's modern in that it's humorous. It's not trying to take itself too seriously. I think you can take humor seriously while also showing a lighter side.
Can you describe some of the animal portraits and tell us how you invite the viewer in?
Well, I think I invite the viewer in because they recognize immediately. I mean, I'm a realist in that a cat will look like a cat, but the cats are also wearing Byzantine-style clothing.
Take us through the process. Do you actually have the animals posing as you do this?
I don't. One of the best things to happen in the last 10 years is Google image search. So I get a lot of my reference materials from there. I used to have stacks and stacks of books of wildlife. I use my own pets and friends' pets too, but as far as an iguana, I don't know anyone with an iguana, unfortunately.
I thought you might spend a lot of time at the zoo.
I have spent a lot of time at the zoo, and one of the pieces is the albino alligator at Audubon Zoo. But she's wearing a dress and she's in the swamp and she's kind of strolling around and looking a little creepy. It's a ghost gator.
Yeah, I remember seeing the big moon in the background, Cypress Swamp.
Yep. So it's very dark. I'm a transplant to New Orleans. I've only been here for 8.5 years.
Where is home for you?
Before it was Boston. Before that it was Baltimore. Before that it was Virginia.
And you moved to New Orleans just after Katrina.
Yeah.
A few weeks.
Yeah, I did.
Well, why did you decide to come to New Orleans?
I think it's because at that time in my life, I felt sort of wrecked, sort of at loose ends, and it was a good match. I'd just gotten out of a bad relationship, and so I was at a kind of destroyed place in my life, and I think it wasn't out of some sort of sense that I could save New Orleans, and I felt very selfish because it actually healed me. Just by not being all put together, I was able to put together myself.
When did you know that art was your calling?
I've always known. It was really the only thing I could ever really do. I don't think there's anything very profound in it. It was since I was a child, I just drew and painted.
Did you always draw and paint animals?
Mostly people, actually. My work has been largely figurative up until maybe the past year and a half. And I still think of it as figurative work. It just happens to be that the faces are the faces of beasts.
The faces of beasts. And when did the humor creep into your work?
Well, to tell you the truth, I spent 5 years as a caricature artist. And I think that kind of made its lasting impression upon me. I could never get past needing to tell a little bit of a joke, maybe have little hidden Easter eggs, you know, inside the work. Where if the longer you look at it, the more you see.
These works are all oil on canvas?
Yes.
Will viewers see the world a little differently after this experience?
I hope so. It's not necessarily my intent. I want to make work that's friendly and accessible. I get a lot of pleasure out of when somebody sees it and laughs and smiles instead of feeling alienated.
There's also a gallery tradition on Dirty Linen Night. Will you be participating in that activity?
They like to leave baskets of dirty linen out in front of the galleries, I guess, for the taking. And we've got plenty of dirty laundry, for sure.
Artist Jane Telton and Foundation Gallery Director Erica Emroy. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Diane.
Jane Talton's Beastly Delights can be seen at the Foundation Gallery, 1109 Royal Street, through August 31st. Proceeds will be donated to Animal Rescue New Orleans. Dirty Linen Night is Saturday, August 9th, 6 to 10 p.m. in the French Quarter. More info on the event and the afterparty at artscouncilofneworleans.org. August 9th is the second Saturday of the month, and across town that means the St. Claude Arts District is also in full swing. Sharla Hammond, a 24-year-old artist and muralist from Houston, whose star is rising, will join New Orleans bassist and composer James Singleton in an arts experience at LA 46, a general store and vintage market which hosts monthly exhibits and performances. Sharla Hammond joins us by phone. Hello and welcome to New Orleans.
Thank you.
Will this be your debut in the Crescent City as an artist?
Yes, it is. Prior to actually having my first show here, I came out to the city to wheat paste. Just put some art up outside, but nothing serious.
To wheat paste. What is that?
Wheat pasting is a term used by a lot of street artists when they make the glue, which itself is called wheat paste. It's compiled of flour, sugar, and water, and you boil it up and it makes a glue. And instead of putting graffiti up with spray paint, they draw the picture beforehand, print it out, and they go out and get the wheat paste and put it up on the walls or wherever they choose to have their art.
And you will be doing this on Saturday in the form of a large mural?
Yes, actually like the largest piece I've ever worked on before, because prior to wheat pasting, I painted, and normally that would be no bigger than maybe about 8 feet. But this is about 36 feet wide and 10 feet tall, so it's going to be a fun ride with this one. It's pretty big. It's on the side of LA 46.
What's going to be your focus?
I want to focus on people, just people that I meet, people that I enjoy in the arts world, like Warhol, Basquiat. I wanted to draw them and just focus on them engaging with one another. Actually, when I thought of the idea, I was listening to Everyday People on the radio, and I was like, that'd be pretty cool. It's pretty inspiring in itself, meeting people and seeing a lot of different faces. They serve as muses for me, so I figured just doing the entire wall and interacting with one another would be pretty cool.
So take us through the process of this wheat pasting. You're actually drawing on paper and then pasting that on the wall to make the mural?
Yes. I get large swatches of paper and draw whatever I choose to draw on there and paint it with gouache paint. And after I do that, I'll cut it out into the shape that I need it to be. And I create the wheat paste, you know, in the kitchen with the flour, sugar, and the water. And pour the wheat paste in a large, like, gallon bucket. Have my roller paints with me, roll up the art, you know, on the paper, and go outside and just paste it up with a roller brush or a broom, whatever works for you to spread the paint out on the paper and the wall. You just have to be really swift with it, and it dries pretty fast.
Now, This is considered street art.
Yeah, street art.
But you are fine arts trained.
Right.
Tell us about your background and how you came to wheat pasting.
Well, I've been drawing all of my life, and in high school, I started taking art classes and taking painting seriously, and I decided this is something that I wanted to pursue. Being a painter full-time, I thought that could be, I don't know, a pretty neat job to have, and I wanted to, you know, figure out myself more as an artist, so I enrolled in art school at Rutgers University all the way up in Jersey, and I got my BS there in fine arts. From there, I started painting, doing a lot of commissions, showing in a few local galleries. But somewhere in that time, I got a little disenchanted from it all. It became routine, and that's when I started experimenting with just going outside and finding public spaces to work in with other artists. And that's when I got into wheat pasting. It's pretty cool how it all panned out as a wheat paster. As soon as I started to put my art out locally in Houston, I began to get more recognition. And it works. It's pretty cool.
Are we going to see any recognizable New Orleanians in the work?
Well, Big Frida, the New Orleans bounce music originator, and Louis Armstrong. And I don't know. There's the Voodoo Queen.
Marie Laveau.
And that was Marie Laveau.
Yeah. So we might see some people that we recognize.
Perhaps. Not so sure. Yeah, I want it to be something that, even if there aren't any recognizable faces, for it to be something that people still enjoy looking at. Fun to the eyes, conversation piece. I'll be there to talk about it and meet people. I'm really excited. So excited.
When will you start working on this in New Orleans?
I'll be coming out there on Friday, and that early morning, like as early as 3 in the morning, I'll be going out to put up the art. It's going to be a really early start for me.
So it's likely that those passing by in the wee morning hours might get to see you in action.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the passerbys who may be coming back from bars and karaoke, because I think the Hi-Ho Lounge is down there. Yeah.
So.
The random straggler, sure.
All right, Charlotte. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Artist Charlotte Hammond joins New Orleans bassist and composer James Singleton in an evening of art and music at LA 46 in the St. Claude Arts District, 2232 St. Claude Avenue, Saturday, August 9th, beginning at 6 p.m. Bassist James Singleton performs at 8 p.m. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. New Orleans native and local photographer Michelle Verisco developed a curiosity about her region at a young age. With a biochemist for a mom and engineer dad, she started learning on family road trips. Her dad would explain the Bonnie Carey Spillway or point out dead trees while driving down LA-1 to Grand Isle. As a professional photographer, Verisco has stuck with that theme. For the past decade, she's documented coastal erosion from a unique vantage point, a small airplane. Michelle sat down with WWNO coastal reporter Jesse Hardman. She started by talking about a photo called Fort Proctor that depicts land loss around the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet.
When I took this picture, I was looking for descriptors of land loss that would make sense to even a child, you know, just the simplest version of what is happening. And this became a kind of symbolic image. Well, it looks like land that's sort of disintegrating. And there's this little man-made structure built far out on the edge. And then there's all this beautiful water around it, clouds in the sky.
It kind of had the effect for me of like I was looking at a, you know, like a globe from your middle school social studies class.
Totally, yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit of how you set this photo up from just the logistics of getting the shot?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really set it up. I asked my friend Mike if he would fly me over to this area. It happened so many times where I'd be in the air and I would see exactly what my friends who were scientists were describing to me, but they didn't really have a lot of good imagery around it. Like when I would go online to look for a description of land loss that really satisfied my curiosity in terms of what it meant, I just didn't see those images out there. So I had to go get my own.
So let's take a look at the second photo here. It's a series. Can you just describe what it looks like for listeners?
On the left is disintegrating islands of marshes. So they weren't meant to be islands. They're grasses that are dying in bodies of water, and they're left in little circles of grasses after channels were cut through the area, allowing salt water in. On the right image are tons of channels cut through the marshes. And, you know, it's clear that they become straws sucking the salt water deep into freshwater or brackish water areas that were not prepared to receive that salt. So it's like pouring salt into wounds. It just kills the grasses and expedites the demise of the land. When you're looking from the bird's eye view, it helps us to see what's happening to the land, almost like looking at a little petri dish. You know, you've got the height and the distance from the subject that gives you the perspective on it that's different from when you're right in the field.
You said that you had a show in China. That must have been interesting.
It was quite interesting. I did a talk working closely with a translator, of course, and the response from especially the young people was fascinating. They were engaged in the conversation. But I took a week to go to the Yangtze River and just study the waters there and see what their environment was like. And it was kind of scary.
Yeah, what'd you see?
I saw a lot of pollution. There were some gorgeous mountain ranges, and there was a lot of plastic trash in the waters. You know, I filmed and shot stills of what I saw, and it really brings things into focus. The kinds of probably the looseness of regulations there. I really didn't see many birds. I don't remember seeing fish. It was so different from Louisiana.
You said you also did an exhibit in Houma.
Oh yeah.
And I just would love for you to juxtapose kind of the reaction in China to the one you got in Houma.
I had people that came up to me that have experienced land loss firsthand, that, you know, their insights were so deep and so visceral. One woman told me that she used to live in a home in Montague, and it's just now they're even not calling the lakes by the names because the lakes are merging. They're losing land so fast. I wasn't sure what the reception was going to be. And it was intensely positive.
I'm talking to Michelle Verisco, who's a local New Orleans photographer, and she's been documenting coastal issues here in Louisiana for over a decade now. Let's take a look at this photo, land use.
So the land use image is of a levee on the left. In the center is a town that's on the edge of the marshes that's built off of a canal. And the image goes from houses and buildings on the side of a canal, and the canal continues into marshes that are dying rapidly. And the image on the right is of factories, you know, petrochemical factories along the edge of the marshes. You know, I think that the decisions that we've made to sustain our life in some ways have affected land loss and accelerated it probably 10 times what it would have been naturally. My work really stems from the place of how do we live with nature? It's a simple question, but when you ask a question, it can really resound with some unpleasant answers.
How do you get people to look past what they already know or what they think they know about this issue and to just look at your photo and be impacted by it?
Well, the question I love to hear after they look at the photos is, how do I go there? Where do I begin to discover some of this myself firsthand? So I've got a bunch of resources for them, you know. I think going out into the marshes, into the forests, the cypress forests, into the swamps, into the houseboats that sit in the water, and then you ride around on a canoe or a little flatboat with a motor, is the best way to get to know how gorgeous, how luscious, how vital and important, and why this place is called a paradise. You know, we don't want to look at it as paradise lost, but it's paradise that we're losing. So the best way to understand why people call it paradise is to go and experience it firsthand.
Michelle Risco is a New Orleans-based photographer who's been covering coastal issues for over 10 years. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You can see some of Michelle Verisco's photos at WWNO.org. Support for WWNO's Coastal Desk comes from the Walton Family Foundation and Kabakoff Family Foundation. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.